Well past midnight, a car pulls up in front of my apartment building carrying a troop of teenage boys and a set of stereo speakers so loud that the floor of my apartment begins to shake. I've learned to ignore such disturbances. Where else do they have to go, I say to myself. But on this particular evening, I have someone staying over. I know that my neighbors next door have just brought home their newborn child, and so I pull on some shorts and head downstairs for a chat with our nighttime visitors. As I approach the car, the voices stop. The heads within all turn my way. "Listen," I say, "people are trying to sleep around here. Why don't y'all just take it someplace else?" The four boys inside say nothing, don't even move. The wind wipes away my drowsiness, and I suddenly feel exposed, standing in a pair of shorts on the sidewalk in the middle of the night. I can't see the faces inside the car. It's too dark to know how old they are, whether they're sober or drunk, good boys or bad. One of them could be Kyle. One of them could be Johnny. One of them could be me. Standing there, I try to remember the days when I would have been sitting in a car like that, full of inarticulate resentments and desperate to prove my place in the world. The feelings of righteous anger as I shout at Gramps for some forgotten reason. The blood rush of a high school brawl. The swagger that carries me into a classroom, drunk or high, knowing that my teachers will smell beer or reefer on my breath, just daring them to say something. I start picturing myself through the eyes of these boys, a figure of random authority, and know the calculations they might now be making, that if one of them can't take me out, the four of them certainly can. That knotted, howling assertion of self, as I try to pierce the darkness and read the shadowed faces inside the car, I'm thinking that while these boys may be weaker or stronger than I was at their age, the only difference that matters is this. The world in which I spent those difficult times was far more forgiving. These boys have no margin for error. If they carry guns, those guns will offer them no protection from that truth. And it is that truth, a truth that they surely sense but can't admit, and in fact must refuse if they are to wake up tomorrow, that has forced them, or others like them, eventually to shut off access to any empathy they might once have felt. Their unruly maleness will not be contained, as mine finally was, by a sense of sadness at an older man's injured pride. Their anger won't be checked by the intimation of danger that would come upon me when I split another boy's lip or race down a highway with gin clouding my head. As I stand there, I find myself thinking that somewhere down the line both guilt and empathy speak to our own buried sense that an order of some sort is required, not the social order that exists necessarily, but something more fundamental and more demanding. A sense, further, that one has a stake in this order, a wish that, no matter how fluid this order sometimes appears, it will not drain out of the universe. I suspect that these boys will have to search long and hard for that order, indeed any order that includes them as more than objects of fear or derision. And that suspicion terrifies me, for I now have a place in the world, a job, a schedule to follow. As much as I might tell myself otherwise, we are breaking apart, these boys and me, into different tribes, speaking a different tongue, living by a different code. The engine starts, and the car screeches away. I turn back toward my apartment, knowing that I've been both stupid and lucky, knowing that I am afraid after all.